Welcome, Seth. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Kara. I'm glad to be here.
It's May, spring is here, and there's lots and lots of stuff going on in the natural world. What are you engaged in up there?
Right now, we're conducting an annual May lake trout assessment. We do two different lake trout surveys each week where we set gill nets, and then from the lake trout that we capture in these gill nets, we collect length data, weight. We collect an ear bone that we use for aging the fish. We identify the sex of it and its state of maturity from a reproductive standpoint, and we collect its stomach contents. And the purpose of this assessment is to determine the catch rates of lake trout, and then we can compare the data that we collect with biological data from other jurisdictions in Lake Superior.
Mm-hmm. How are the lake trout doing?
We're catching some decent numbers of them now. Our catch rates were a little bit low in the beginning of the survey, but what will be more telling to us is when we compare these with some of the other jurisdictions, and we do this on an annual basis, as do many of the other natural resources agencies in Lake Superior.
Well, are you working with other fish this time of year?
Yeah, we're also doing a spawning lake sturgeon assessment, and we net lake sturgeon in Pigeon Bay. We take some biological data and we release those fish alive. Our goal for that study is to estimate the size of the spawning sturgeon population that are presently using the Pigeon River for spawning. And lake sturgeon are one of the native fish species that the Grand Portage Band is really interested in restoring. Lake sturgeon populations in the entire Lake Superior Basin have been low for a long time, and a number of different agencies are working hard to restore them. So there's real concern for lake sturgeon in Lake Superior, and that's why we're working with some other agencies on trying to help to restore them and understand what their population levels are.
What happened to them?
You ask a good question. I suspect that habitat loss due to effects of logging on river systems probably really compromised their ability to spawn successfully. In addition to that, they probably were overfished a couple hundred years ago. When their populations were much higher.
They're an interesting looking fish.
Yeah, they are. They're great to work on. It's almost like working with dinosaurs.
Well, let's move off the water and move on to the land. You have a couple of ongoing studies, and one of them is to do with collared moose. What's going on with that study?
Right now, it appears that our collared moose began finding calving sites, the cows did, in the last few weeks. And it looks like, based on the GPS locations we're getting from those collars, that they're likely dropping calves right now. We have nine collared moose presently on the reservation, eight of which are cows. And several of these began making some large movements a few weeks ago. Then they've localized and are using very small areas of habitat, less than 100 meters across. And what that means is that these animals are likely bedded down, are waiting to drop their calves, or have recently dropped their calves and are just using a very small area at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Another interesting thing that we've noticed being out in the woods is that ticks are out in full force. People that spend lots of times in the woods should check themselves frequently. There are several different tick-borne illnesses that can have serious health impacts to humans, and I speak from experience on this. I've had Lyme's disease twice when I lived in Wisconsin, and it's a serious issue, and people should really take it seriously.
Okay, so the ticks are here.
Tick numbers have increased across the entire Midwest. I just recently saw an article where the Lyme's infection rate in deer ticks has also increased. The Lyme's infection rate used to be very low in ticks. 2 or 3% of the deer ticks carried the Lyme's disease. Now it looks like up to a third of deer ticks actually carry Lyme's disease. So when you compound increasing deer tick numbers and the infection rate in individual ticks, the risk of getting Lyme's disease in Minnesota has increased dramatically. And I think last year they showed the highest disease incidence of Lyme's in humans in history in Minnesota. So it's something people should really be aware of and be careful of. That said, I don't advocate that people not spend time in the woods. I think it's very important to spend time in the woods for recreational reasons and for mental health reasons. Just be careful and make sure that you pick ticks off of you and check yourself frequently.
Well, that's good advice. I was up at the reservation recently and saw what looked like birdhouses kind of in the wetlands, and we were wondering what those were.
Yeah, one of the projects that our water quality department is working on is installing wood duck boxes in several of our different wetland areas and on several of our different water bodies. And these wood duck boxes are great. Wood ducks are cavity nesters and like to use these boxes to nest. What they'll do is they'll lay their eggs in the box itself. They'll wait till they hatch, and then the young wood ducks actually climb out of the box and just drop into the water where the wood ducks rear them. They only use the box just for nesting and for hatching purposes, and then they never use it again. But it's really nice. A lot of the people in the area have started seeing wood ducks hanging around these nest boxes, so that's nice to know that they're actually being used by the waterfowl.
Do they need that help? Where would they be nesting otherwise?
That's a good question. I think duck populations in the U.S. dropped significantly about two or three decades ago. I think through a lot of the waterfowl restoration programs, the things that Ducks Unlimited have done, a lot of the waterfowl numbers have come up quite a bit. Wood duck nesting habitat is pretty low because there aren't lots of large trees with natural cavities nowadays due to the timber practices that we use. So adding these wood duck boxes to water bodies really helps to give them a little bit of an edge in terms of reproducing.
All right. Well, we're speaking with Dr. Seth Moore. He's a wildlife biologist and director of the Biology and Environment Departments at Grand Portage Trust Lands, and he joins us once a month by phone. Is there anything that you'd like to add, Seth?
No, I think we've covered a lot of material for today, and I look forward to speaking with you again in a couple of weeks, and we'll give you another update.
Great. Really enjoy it, and I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Yep. Thank you, Kara. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.